Hey everybody, I am your host Eric Mueller, and welcome back to The Eric Mueller Show, the podcast where we explore what makes any successful person's inner clock tick. Today I have a big announcement. I am proud to officially introduce a new core element of the podcast, the Success Portfolio. Let me give you a little bit of background. An investment portfolio is the compilation of investments that lays the foundation for your financial goals. Think stocks, bonds, mutual funds, 401ks. Well, here on The Eric Mueller Show, I want to discover how successful people invest in themselves and build the foundation for their success. My guest will share with you the skills, traits, habits, mindsets, and attributes that make up their success portfolios and keep them at the top of their game. Today's guest, David Rozelle, will be the first to share with us what makes up his success portfolio. David is the founder and president of Rozelle Wealth Management, an entrepreneurial firm located in Bend, Oregon. For over 20 years, he has specialized in working with individuals and families who are at or near retirement to help them live the life they've always imagined. David's inspiration and zest for life have been shaped by a lifetime of international adventures. With a current tally of more than 75 countries on 6 different continents, his quest for extreme travel has included hitchhiking from Nairobi to Cape Town, Africa, and climbing the infamous peaks of the Nepalese Himalayas. He was even one of the privileged to partake in tearing down the Berlin Wall. As a recipient of the Retirement Distribution Certificate from University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business, David excels in making complicated financial planning topics easy to understand. As an accomplished speaker, he has addressed international audiences numbering in the thousands, including the Million Dollar Roundtable and Visage Worldwide. David is also the author of 2 entertaining books that meld his passions of adventure and finance: Failure is Not an Option, Creating Certainty in the Uncertainty of Retirement, and Keep Climbing, A Millennial's Guide to Financial Planning. I'm so excited to kick off the Success Portfolio with David Rozelle as the inaugural guest. Let's head on over to the interview. All right, so welcome back to The Eric Mueller Show, the podcast where we explore what makes any successful person's inner clock tick. Now, if you're tuning into the show today with aspirations of retiring at some point in your life, you're in luck. Now, this goal of retirement is different for everyone. Some of you might be thinking that this is a long time away. For others, maybe it's right around the corner. Perhaps you even have a desire to retire much earlier than most. No matter where you are in this pursuit, one thing is absolutely clear. And that is that failure is not an option. I've brought acclaimed author David Rozelle onto the podcast today to help you achieve success with your financial goals and live the life you've imagined. David, welcome to the show.
Eric, it's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. It means the world that you're willing to share this advice on really such a crucial topic like retirement. David, what does retirement mean to you? I know I've read that you don't really like that word, that you maybe you even despise that word retirement. Would you share more?
Yeah, it's interesting that I don't really love that word, being that I'm in the retirement planning business. But interestingly enough, the word retirement comes from the Latin word retire, which means to end or be put out of use. And no one wants to ever be put out of use. And we know so many people who get to the top of their financial mountain, they're leaving their occupation or selling their business, and they're independent of the paycheck. They're financially independent, but they're starting that coffee shop or that Airbnb because they still want to be relevant. So because of that reason, we like to use that term financial independence over retirement.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because, yeah, no one wants to just wither away. And like, you know, if you have an active mind, like you want to keep doing something and you want to remain, you know, relevant to your friends and family. You don't want to just wither away into the distance.
That is true. And let's face it, our partners probably didn't sign up for us 24/7 either, right?
Yeah, David, I think like another piece that I think is so important for people listening, and we have, you know, some younger people listening as well, that maybe they really want to retire early. You know, maybe they've even heard of the FIRE, you know, type movement and really want to get, you know, that financial independence and retire early quickly. What would be some advice that you'd share with them if they're, let's say they have a job, maybe let's say they're making $50,000 a year. What would be, you know, some of the actionable steps that they could take to save for retirement, or what should they be investing in? Are there any tools or investment strategies that you might advise that person?
Yeah, I think the biggest muscle that we all have is the one between our ears. And I think it's about learning the basics on how money works. And I learned at a young age from my grandmother and my father that you don't really need to do anything extraordinary if your goal is to retire early or accumulate wealth. We just need to do some ordinary things extraordinarily well. Ordinary things like not live on 100 or 110% of our paycheck, but live on, say, 90% of our paycheck and systematically pay ourselves first. And by doing this over time, that power of compound interest takes over.
Yeah. Yeah. Compound interest, very powerful thing, obviously, in the finance world. You know, if you have more money to make more money, right?
Yeah, I'll never forget the time my grandmother at a young age asked me, she said, out of the blue, she held up a penny. And she said, David, would you rather have this penny doubled every day for 30 days or $1 million? And of course, I said, Eric, I'll take the $1 million.
$1 million, yeah.
And then in my books, I show this chart because it's so powerful. You need to see it to believe it. But I know you've seen it in Failure's Not an Option. But if you actually take one penny and double it the next day to 2 cents and then 4 cents, 8 and 16 cents, by day 18, you have $1,200. But there's a reason why Albert Einstein said it's the eighth wonder of the world. Because by the time you start doubling it for the next 12 days, it turns into more than $5 million. And so it's not doing anything extraordinary. It's doing ordinary things extraordinarily well.
That's wonderfully stated. And I honestly, David, I think I would have had the exact same answer. Even now, you know, having seen that in your book, you still think like, how could a penny doubled like that? How could that possibly be more than $1 million in 30 days? Like what? I mean, your brain just like doesn't comprehend it in that way right away. It just seems like that's impossible.
It really doesn't. You know, a friend, a gentleman named David Bach, who's a best-selling author, he titled something that I also write about called The Latte Factor, because I come across a lot of young people that say, you know, things are expensive, inflation these days. It's really hard to put away money. And David will ask them and say, you know, well, do you ever have coffee out? And they go, yeah, yeah. Well, where do you go? And they'll say, Starbucks. How often do you go? Oh, usually on my way to work, 5 days a week. And then he'll ask them, how much is that coffee? And then he'll ask them if they got a breakfast sandwich. And so let's say it even comes out to $5 a day, which is easy to do. And he's able to show them that if you do the $5 a day times 5 days a week is $25, and you compound that over the course between now and retirement, and he's showing them in some cases where they're going to have $500 to $1 million in savings if they would save that amount of money, $100 a month. And he titles it the latte factor. So no excuses out there.
Yeah. Yeah. You can save, you know, and I think probably one struggle, you know, maybe more in the people that are in my generation or possibly those below it, and I'm almost 30 years old, I think maybe we don't really know what the right investments are. You know, we have 401ks possibly with a job, but do you suggest that people, you know, to that point of compound interest, should they be looking at individual stocks? Should they be looking at other, you know, type of index funds or mutual funds? Do you suggest crypto? What do you think, David? Is there anything you would suggest that people avoid? Maybe it'd be a better way to ask that.
You know, Warren Buffett only invests in things that he knows and things that interest him. I think that's a great question. I think it's more important to put the money away. That's the hard part. Put that $100 or that 10% of your paycheck into an individual retirement account or your 401k each and every period. That's first and foremost. And then second of all, you know, a lot of people enjoy the investing side and others don't. And if you don't, I suggest getting a coach. Tiger Woods was the best golfer in the world, and he had two coaches. Get a financial coach, a financial advisor reputable in your area to help you with the more commoditized side, which is the, you know, which investments. There's no the one way to get there. One type of investment that we have for all of our clients, it's not where we put all their portfolios, but we absolutely love ETFs, which stand for exchange traded funds. Are you familiar with those, Eric?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, 90% of success has been proven comes from owning all 24 asset classes and rebalancing. And these asset classes are different types of stocks and bonds. And you can buy these indexes, which are called exchange traded funds. And so let's say you buy the SPDR, which represents the S&P 500. You're buying that one ETF and you own parts of 500 different equities, the largest 500 stocks, by owning this one ETF. And one of the reasons why we like ETFs over mutual funds is that all of these investments have an overhead to them. And ETFs overhead in general is 5 to 10 times less than a mutual fund. And they're more tax efficient, but highly recommend reading up on ETFs.
Okay. Yeah, that's great actionable advice. And so really at the core of it, if we just rewind for a second, you're going to want to save at minimum 10% towards a retirement account. You'd say either an IRA or a 401k would be options. And live off 90, you know, maybe not all the 90%, but you're not going to want to dip into any more than 90% of your take-home pay.
Exactly. And if you start doing that now, that's truly when the power of compound interest, the benefits will be right before your eyes down the road.
Yeah. And that leads back to that penny analogy. You know, if you think back to, if you started only on day 15 with a penny, think of where you'd be compared with when you started on day one. So I think that's really a good piece to know if you're listening and you're in your early 20s or regardless of what age you are, if you're in that kind of lower, you may be the first third of your life, it's never too late to start. You're never going to regret starting early either. So I think that's really actionable advice.
Yeah, I meet, you know, investors in their 50s and 60s that said, I wish I learned this when I was in my 20s and 30s. I woulda, shoulda, coulda. And it's true. But one of my responses to them is, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the next best time is today. You know, if it is to be, it's up to me is the attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. And a piece that I really liked, David, so, and we'll tag your books in the show notes here, but in Failure is Not an Option, I do like the analogy of the mountain. When you talk about, you know, comparing your financial summit, so to speak, of retirement, where you kind of have, you know, the first half you're accumulating and you're going up the mountain, you reach the peak and then you got to come down. Would you just share why that's so important that people realize, you know, during the second half of their financial journey, that why is that so important? You know, the accumulating is important, but you also got to keep that money, right?
Yeah. You know, I find that finances, money, the topic that we're talking about today, it's an arduous, heavy subject matter for most people out there. So what I did in the books is start out every chapter with a riveting travel story. I had an opportunity to travel to 75 countries around the world so far. Got a lot more on my list. I start with a financial story and lead into a financial lesson. And the reason I mention this is because this will help answer your question, is a number of years ago, I had an opportunity to meet a guy who's always been kind of a hero for me. His name is Ed Viesters. And Ed resides in Seattle, Washington. And he's probably the best mountaineer that has ever walked the planet Earth. He's the only person that has successfully summited Mount Everest 7 times and every time has done so without supplemental oxygen.
Ooh.
There are 14 8,000 meter peaks in the world. He summited all of them, again, without supplemental oxygen. And I'll never forget the time he said, you know, David, most people think our goal is to get to the top of the mountain. And he said, that's the last goal that any of us experienced mountaineers would have. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, when we get to the top of Mount Everest, we're only done with half of our journey. He said, 80% of the accidents 80% of the deaths happen on the descent. And when Ed said that it's the second half of his journey that takes the most amount of risks and needs the most amount of planning, that was my aha moment to write this book, because I realized that, you know, most of your listeners are climbing the financial mountain, but one day down the road with proper planning, they get to the top of the financial summit. But that's not the end all goal, because they have the second half or the descent ahead of them. And I believe that when you reach that financial summit, let's call it your day of financial independence, it's the last day that you're funding your IRAs and 401ks, and it's the first day that you start living off these accounts. And these days, because we're living longer, people are living on it not just 2 decades, but 3 and 4 decades. So I say to the listeners out there that it's the second half of your financial journey that also takes on the most amount of risk and needs the most amount of planning. And that's why I want everyone starting to save and invest today.
Yeah, the best time was yesterday. Next best time is today. So yes. I think great advice there, David. Great advice. And what risks have you noticed your clients, you know, because you are a business owner and you help people plan for retirement in this way. What are some big risks that you've seen investors face as they enter that second half of their financial journey or their descent down their mountain as they enter into that time?
Well, one of the biggest risks that they face is something that's on everyone's mind today. You notice, Eric, when you go to the grocery store, you're like, huh, last time I was in here, this thing was $4.50. It's now $5.50.
Yeah.
Inflation is right in front of our eyes. But here's the detrimental effect of inflation when it comes to our retirement. Any idea what inflation averages over time?
Well, I know what it is now. Gosh, if I had to guess, I'd say maybe 5-6%.
Not far away. You know, inflation now is hovering around 8%. We're at a 40-year high. Yeah. And it's been as high as 18% in 1980.
Oh, man.
in Zimbabwe, it was 1,200% last year. But on average, because everything falls back to averages, it's between 3 and 4%. So if we take 3.5%, mathematically, numbers don't lie, the cost of living doubles every 20 years. So let's say that you're 40 years of age today, and you say to your financial advisor, I want to retire in 20 years at age 60, and I want to live, I'm going to use a round number for easy math, I want to live on $100,000 net of taxes. So the advisor not only has to plan on how much money you're going to need to live on $100,000 a year, but if the cost of living doubles every 20 years, how much money do we need to take out of that investment IRA on the day of retirement at age 60 to buy what $100,000 buys today? $200,000. So now you're 60 years young, and I believe graying means playing. and I know that for a fact, firsthand. And you are now 60 years young and 20 short years into retirement. My parents are turning 80. They're still playing pickleball and golf all the time. They're active. You're now 80 years young. How much money needs to come out of that investment account to buy at age 80 what $100,000 bought at age 40?
Say 400.
Exactly. That 200 doubles again. So the fastest growing portion of our population are centenarians, people 100 years or older. My partner Heather's grandmother recently passed away in Wyoming at age 106.
Oh, man.
So just to play along with me, Eric, you're now 100 years old, because who knows, we could live that long with the advancements in technology and medicine. How much money do you need to take out at age 100 to buy what $100,000 bought at age 40?
Well, David, we're over 750,000 now. We're at 800,000.
Exactly. Now, most people think I'm pulling their leg when I say this. And when I ask generally, you know, retirees in the audience, and they're saying, this doesn't make sense. And I'll say, I will bet everything I own that you spent more money on your last automobile than your parents spent on their first home. And that puts it in perspective. So I share this story with you, not only because inflation has detrimental impacts. I say this with the to the audience, not because I want to spread fear. I want to spread knowledge. These numbers are real. And so many people are not able to live the life they've imagined in retirement because they just haven't planned and they haven't factored in some of the major risks, inflation being one of them.
Yeah. And David, let's talk a little bit about, you know, that risk. So market risk, your company, Roselle Wealth Management, you know, your risk blueprint. Would you just briefly share what that is and why that's important in this piece of the puzzle?
Yeah. So the focus of our practice with our clients are people who have already accumulated wealth and they're in the second half of the journey. Because as I mentioned, that second half takes on more risk and needs more planning than at any other stage. But what it's really doing is we're firm believers that when we're in our years of financial independence, that we're taking a look at their expenses moving forward. And if someone's living on $100,000 a year, they might have $50,000 that are what are considered the necessity expenses, like transportation, food, taxes, healthcare, any kind, you know, living expenses. Those are necessities. Well, every one of our clients has guaranteed income for life for those. So they have their Social Security, which I now refer to younger people as social insecurity. Some of our older clients have pensions. And then there's other ways to have guaranteed income streams for life just for that segment. And once we're able to tell them that their core goals or their core necessities are guaranteed for life, everything above that, we're putting in the least expensive, most diversified types of portfolios. And that's where we're often referring to the exchange traded funds. But what these blueprints show is people know how much money they have. They know their net worth, but they don't really have a clear idea of what their money can or can't do for them moving forward. And it spells out year by year where their money's going to come from, how much money they can live on, so that they have the highest probability of never outliving their income.
Perfect. Yeah, I think it's an important point too that you mentioned that. That is when you're actually on that descent. So those of you listening, if you're younger, you'll come to David later for help with his company. But, you know, David, so really we've talked a little bit about that financial piece, kind of the really, you know, the backbones of that. I really want to talk about, you know, success now with you and really look at what you believe success is. So we can put a number on it. And like you just mentioned with that analogy, you know, success might be in a monetary standpoint, having that $800,000 a year to live on when you're 100 years old. You could measure that very easily. But maybe in a more abstract way, what does success mean to you? Do you have a definition that kind of sticks out in your mind as far as what it is?
Great question. You know, my definition of success has changed over the years. When I was younger, it would have been driving a Porsche 911, having a beautiful home, having very large bank accounts. I still like cars, although now that I can afford one of those cars, I consciously decide that that's not who I am. But the best way to sum it up is the way I did it in Failure's Not an Option. And I talked about spending a month living with a tribe in Fiji. And this tribe, or the people of Fiji, they had dirt floors and they had no windows in their home. And they had no iPads, they had no iPhones, and certainly no IRAs. Right. But what they did have was this unwavering happiness that I've never seen in a society before. They had the largest smiles. They had congeniality. I later learned that there's no word for stress in the Fijian language. And so what I learned and what I write about is that the Fijians might not have riches representing large pocketbooks, lots of money, but they have more wealth than anyone else I've ever met, wealth coming from the heart. So for me to define success at this stage, if I had to pick one word, Eric, it would be happiness. And I realized this after reading Dr. Wayne Dyer. And he's one of the most influential authors in my life. He passed away 5 years ago and sold hundreds of millions of books. His philosophy was remember yesterday, dream about tomorrow, but live today. And I'll never forget the time he said, the most least selfish thing we can do in this lifetime is be happy. And I thought, that sounds more selfish. What do you mean selfless? He says, because when you're happy, you're not a burden on anybody. And I thought about that for a while. And Eric, and I ask you, I don't need to know any names, but whoever comes to mind when I say, who's the least happy person you know, are they a burden on other people?
I would say yes.
And whenever I say, who's the most happiest person in your life, whoever comes to mind, are they a burden on anybody?
Not at all.
The least selfish thing we can do in this lifetime, Eric, is be happy.
That is awesome. And you touched on the wealth piece and that being, you know, differentiating that between being rich and being wealthy. And, you know, that's kind of more of that intangible piece and being happy and doing what you love, spending time with people that you care about. So I think that is super important for people to realize and make sure that they keep in the forefront of their mind as they're progressing through life. And going even deeper into this question, David, I really like to explore what keeps successful people like yourself driven. Are there any driving forces that you have found that really keep your inner clock ticking and just continually striving to chase that success, which would be happiness for you?
Well, you know, happiness doesn't just happen. It takes work. And even though I consider myself a happy person and those who know me would consider myself a happy person, there's days we just wake up and the mojo's not there. I call it going into the gap. And that's part of human nature. But one of my favorite quotes is that genius is persistence in disguise. When people go, that person's a genius. No, they were just persistent. They stuck with it. They stuck with their schooling or they stuck with their investment plan and lived on 90% of their income instead of 110% of their income. Mm-hmm. Persistence is how we get through and how we achieve. Persistence is how we become a great piano player or a great athlete or a great podcast show host.
Right.
So I think persistence is one of the key words out there for me.
Yeah. Putting in those repetitions. I think that's a huge piece. And I've seen that pay dividends in my own life. I'm sure those of you listening have seen when you're persistent on things, you do see those results over time. May not be immediate. May seem like you're just kind of spinning your wheels and not going anywhere. But I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. You know, it's like the workout facilities, the athletic clubs around our country are so busy in January and the first half of February. And then the persistence drops off. And then it goes back to the same people that show up every day or every week because they have persistence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is a crucial piece, David. And I think this, you know, to lead into really an exciting piece of the show here. So I'm introducing a new component of the show, which is really defining the success portfolio and what that is. And, you know, people listening might wonder, hey, what is that? Well, a portfolio in finance terms is the assets that you hold, the investments that you hold that make up what is going to hopefully appreciate and take you to your destination. So the success portfolio is really, what are those more intangible assets, such as persistence potentially, that make up that portfolio, that keep you moving towards success, which in David's case is happiness. Are there any traits, skill sets, habits that come to mind, David, that are really crucial to make up that portfolio for you, that success portfolio, maybe two or three, you know, we could call them stocks, so to speak?
Well, one of the things that I do, I believe that gratitude is another key word in my life. I believe what we think about expands. I complete every morning something called the 5-minute journal. 5-minute gratitude journal. And you wake up in the morning with your cup of coffee and it starts out by saying, what are the three things that you're most grateful for at that moment? And sometimes I have to put some thought into it. Sometimes it just rolls off the pen. What has to happen today for today to be a great day? And so that takes me usually about 2.5 minutes. And at the end of the day, the lower part of the page is darkened to represent evening. what were the three best things, greatest things that happened to you today? And then what did I learn today? And it's the persistence of doing this and following gratitude, because if you're focused on gratitude, that's what expands. And that has been one of those persistent things that I've been doing in my life that has made a big difference. It's a small thing that makes a big difference.
I love that, David. Thank you for being the first guest to answer that. I really appreciate that. That's awesome. I'm super excited to share it with everybody. All right. So David's success portfolio, persistence and gratitude. I love those qualities. It reminds me of Gary Vaynerchuk, a guy that I really look up to in the entrepreneur world. And gratitude is huge for him. And I know that I need to start thinking and being more intentional with that in the morning and thinking, you know, how good do I have it really? You know, living in America is phenomenal. You know, we have it so good. So I think that those are two great tools that you can add to your success portfolio if you choose to. And David, so as we wrap up here, how can a member of the audience reach out to you and get involved with what's going on in your business? Obviously, they can read your two books, which we'll have tagged in the show notes. But how would someone best contact you?
Yeah, they can reach me at david@rosellwealthmanagement.com. And Rosell is R-O-S-E-L-L. wealthmanagement.com. They could also tune in. We got a fun podcast that talks about retirement and investing and different subjects. It's called Recession Proof Your Retirement with David Rosell. And if you're anywhere between 20 and 45, I'd recommend Keep Climbing, A Millennial's Guide to Financial Planning. And if you're 45 to 75, I'd recommend Failure is Not an Option, Creating Certainty in the Uncertainty of Retirement.
Wonderful. Yep. And as you said, those books, we can find those on Amazon. We can find those at Barnes & Noble, other bookstores. I have a copy of Failure is Not an Option that David graciously provided to me, a signed copy, no less. So thank you, sir, for that. And I'm definitely going to be picking up the Keep Climbing book, because I think for my age right now, I think that's more pertinent to look at. I've already recommended Failure is Not an Option to my father. I think he's going to love it. And David, really, as we close, I've got one additional question for you. And it's really, man, the markets have been brutal. So year to date, we're down maybe roughly 12%. Today, particularly, I hold some crypto assets. It's been really bad today, just not looking at it. But what can you offer? Are there any pieces of advice that you can offer when we go through kind of these times of uncertainty with the markets?
Yeah, I think that this market downturn for your listening audience is fantastic.
Ooh, and you're tell
thinking,
us more.
What? For those of you who are funding 10% of their paycheck or more, and those of you who are starting tomorrow to do so, if the markets go down 10, 12, 15%, for every dollar that you're funding your 401k, you're getting 10, 12, or 15% more shares. It's on sale. And investing is counterintuitive. If something that you love goes on sale, usually you buy more of them.
Yeah.
And when your investments go on sale, people have fear that take over and they sell, which is exactly the wrong thing to do. So if you're in the accumulation phase and the market goes down, celebrate, invest more, because you're getting more shares. When you're on the second half of the financial journey and you're living off those investments and the stock market's down 15%, you need to sell 15% more shares to get the same $100,000 that year. And that's where we come in and share ways to overcome that. It's really the return of your money in retirement takes precedence on the return on it. It's more important. It's not all about hitting home runs when you're in your retirement years, because Hank Aaron hit more legal home runs than any other baseball player in history, but Hank Aaron struck out more than any baseball player in history. So look at it, change your way of thinking. The down market's a good thing if you're in the accumulation phase. The hard thing is working hard to save that money, but do it.
Boom. Well, that's the call to action, everybody. So the return of your money is more important than the return on it. Hopefully that powers you through this recent volatility with the markets. And David Rosell, man, thank you so much for being on. This has been so much fun. It's been a great episode, and I'm happy to have you be the first guest to introduce the Success Portfolio.
My pleasure, Eric. Great to be on your show. Wishing you continued success.
You as well, sir. Take care.